This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:49 a.m., you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Phil. We now turn our attention to developments in local politics. This week, UMNO had its first Supreme Council meeting after the conclusion of party polls last weekend. Although the winners of the elections were confirmed earlier, several other key appointments were announced in a press conference after the meeting. Firstly, former youth chief Datuk Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki was appointed UMNO Secretary General, while Datuk Sri Azalina Othman, who failed in her bid for vice president, she was appointed as the party's new information chief.
So what do these appointments mean for the party that is attempting to move forward? And why has former Prime Minister Sri Ismail Sabri been left out? Speaking of being left in the dark, Muda was once again excluded from the Unity Government Secretariat meeting, and he has called on Pakatan Harapan to end their month-long wait for an answer on whether the party can join the coalition. What should we make of the omission of Muda, and will this pattern of omission continue in the state elections?
For some thoughts on all these developments, we speak to Dr. James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania. Good morning, James. Thanks as always for joining us. Let's start with UMNO and the new Supreme Council members. So in addition to those elected, there were 13 others that were appointed, including Tan Sri Shahrizad Jalil, Datuk Sri Mazir Khalid, and also Datuk Rizal Nine American. Why were these three brought in, even though they technically lost their respective party races?
Good morning. So I don't think there's anything special about Zahid bringing all these people into the Supreme Council. UMNO's constitution has always allowed the party president to appoint certain number of people straight into the Supreme Council. I think the way to read this is that a lot of these people who are appointed are either loyalists to Zahid or to Najib. They are sort of senior party members, but who lost the internal party elections. So the idea is that you bring them in and you sort of allow them to contribute even though they've lost in the party elections.
Let's focus on two appointments, right? That to Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki as Secretary General and Azalina Othman as Information Chief. How significant are both of these roles and what is their role and responsibilities? What's their JD essentially?
So I think the Secretary General is sort of the chief administrator, the bureaucracy part of the party. It is a crucial post because there were some big issues in UMNO that he will have to resolve. As you know, UMNO did very badly, so he's got to rebuild the party machinery. Azalina's role is basically the public face of UMNO. But I think the way to understand all this movement is that it is quite clear now that Zahid and Najib has complete control of the party. Mm-hmm. Most of the critics, including Ismail Sabri, are totally out in the cold. Some has been sacked, some has been suspended. So I think it's quite clear heading forward they are in total control of the party, and we shouldn't expect any challenges to their leadership so they can concentrate full-time on the upcoming state elections.
But does no challenge to leadership also bar any prospects of UMNO's rejuvenation, which is something that many members who are still in the party, they have been calling for that? Do you think that's really not going to be something that the party is looking to pursue?
Well, I think when you talk about reforms in the party, obviously reforms is not possible given the fact that Zahid and Najib are actually from the previous UMNO era. So as long as he's in charge, I don't think deep-seated reforms is possible. In any case, even if they were not in charge, it's very difficult to have deep-seated reforms because the way to understand UMNO is that it's not only Zahid and Najib in total control, but the fact is that UMNO is fighting for its political survival. If you read the number of UMNO positions or UMNO YBs that's been elected since 2008, it's been going down in every general election. So basically, UMNO is fighting the survival game. And on the other side, it is quite clear that Bersatu and PAS are hoping to finish UMNO off. They nearly finished UMNO off in the last general elections, but Zahid pulled a last-minute hat-trick, which is to join Anwar to form the new government, and he became DPM again. So I think they really is all about survival. I don't think reform is on top of the agenda. Their number one agenda is to recover some of the Malay ground lost in last November's election.
Do you get a sense that that's possible in the coming state elections? What's the reading on the ground? Do you think he can make up some ground?
I think it's very foolish to try to read the ground now. the reality is that we are in Ramadan now, and the most important thing on the Malay calendar is, of course, Hari Raya. So it depends on the mood during Hari Raya. My take is that the government will do its very best, push some projects and money down the ground, make sure the people have a good Hari Raya, and hold state elections after that when you have this thing called a good mood.
Let's turn over to what's happening on the other side of, well, not really the other side of the aisle, but next to UMNO, there's Pakatan Harapan, and really MUDA, that's what we're focusing on next. They have been twice left out of the Unity Government Secretariat meeting, and its status as a PH member is still pending. Why is MUDA being given the cold shoulder by PH, and could this actually backfire on the coalition?
To understand why MUDA is given a cold shoulder, you have to remember in last November's election, MUDA actually pushed its way through, and I think they created a lot of issues in Pakatan, especially in terms of seat allocation. Now, in the end, of course, they were given half a dozen seats, but the problem is that they could not win any of the seats other than one seat. So I think the thinking in Pakatan is that while MUDA can be an important player and an important component of Pakatan, if they were to come in, they might create problems, especially in terms of seat allocation. So I think they need to have an understanding among the three original founders of Pakatan first before they admit MUDA. Now, if MUDA had done very well last November, as in win 80 or 90% of the allocated seats, I don't think we'll be seeing this problem. So it's really a problem of MUDA not being able to deliver the seats. But more importantly, is the fact that, you know, every time you bring a component, a party into the component coalition, you have a problem of seat allocation because one seat less for you means, you know, difficulties with your own supporters. So if MUDA were to come in, it is quite clear that they will ask for at least another half a dozen seats. The question is, which of the Pakatan party is willing to give in to them?
I mean, that's the problem, right? It's a one MP party. And so as a result, when you talk about seat allocation, it really cannot command control. But I guess the central question is, has it been able to at least, you know, get the youth voters into Pakatan Harapan? Do we have any sense on the data or analysis of whether it has been successful, at least in some form, in shifting the younger votes? Because if you remember, G15 was all about getting this new wave of voters to come in, right? That clearly hasn't taken place, isn't it?
That's right. So I think this is where the key lesson is that be careful what you hope for. All the CSO NGOs in Malaysia wanted to push for this automatic registration and lowering of voters to 18 years. So they were working on the assumption that young people are more progressive, they'll vote for more progressive party, and that has shown to be not true, at least for GE15. Now, in terms of MUDA's seats, if you look at it closely, MUDA was not able to shift the needle, but they did get some young people support. But the problem is that the young people support was not large enough for them to cross the line, in other words, to win. So yes, MUDA will add some value to Pakatan Harapan. The question really is, among the three original Pakatan parties, what is the level of representation they want to give to MUDA? Because obviously, if MUDA goes in, my take is that minimum they'll ask for 10 seats. Anything less than 10, I think you'll look a bit odd.
James, in the minute that we have left, Pejuang's application to join Perikatan Nasional, it's been roundly dismissed. Is this the end of the road for Pejuang?
I think so. I think it's quite clear that Pejuang is actually a Mahathir's party. Without Mahathir, it's really going nowhere. I think the reading is on the wall for Pejuang. People do not want to touch it, because people think without Mahathir, it's really a no party at all. The bigger issue is that what's going to happen to Mukri's political career, because he's been riding on his father's coattail for so many years. Without a party vehicle, I think the reading on the Bersatu side, the PAS side, is that by not admitting Pejuang, they're sort of forcing Pejuang to dissolve so that they can join Bersatu. I think that's basically it.
James, thanks as always for speaking with us. That was Dr. James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania, giving us some commentary on some of the political developments over the past week.
I do agree there's comments on Pejuang. It seems likely that Pejuang has lost its Pejuangan.
You were just waiting for that. You had to put that in. Well done. Well done, Phil. It is 7:59 in the morning. We're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, Phil, you'll be speaking to His Excellency Ari Norton de Murat Quintela, Ambassador of Brazil to Malaysia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.